It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the latest OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns, here with Andrew Spade, as usual, as we go through, again, more topics, more information, and a bit of a fun angle on the draft class that the Browns put together this weekend. Hopefully you paid attention to the last 3 days of coverage from the podcast perspective. Ian Valentino on the first night, Andrew provided some expertise the next two nights. It's all there for you if you want to go back and listen to it. We've covered it from a first glance, as well as I think we possibly can. Now we start to dig in, get a little bit removed from the draft, have a little bit more reflection on the roster in totality, and kind of like break it down more thoroughly. Again, you know this from being a loyal listener. If you're new to the show, we do spend some time with beat writers this upcoming week, talking to the people who covered these guys in a more day-to-day, up-close manner at the college level to give you guys a better feel of who they are as people and players. That'll get recorded this week. Have that for you the following week. I think it's one of my favorite things to do. That'll be coming. And then we'll, as a part of many shows in the next 2 to 3 weeks, after consuming all the tape on these guys, we'll have more of a thorough deep dive on those guys individually. Okay. So there's a little bit of what's to come for today's show. I think we have a pretty good one. We're going to do some superlatives on this draft class and talk through kind of category-based thoughts on these guys. But first, I welcome in Mr. Spade. Andrew, I know you're traveling and a little bit busy, but hopefully we've caught you at a good time and ready to yuck it up about this draft class once again.
Oh, it's always a good time to talk about the NFL draft, right? I mean, it's something we look forward to, and like we talked about yesterday, it feels like it's gone too soon. But as you kind of laid out there, we're going to spend some quality time with these prospects and really dig in on them because, you know, Jake, one of the things about this organizational group being sort of entrenched now a little bit, we expect them both, the head coach and the GM, to get extensions this offseason, is you have some level of certainty that these guys are going to be here for a while, right? Because they don't really want to cut bait on their guys. We've seen that from them. And the general manager doesn't seem to be going anywhere, which I think we're in favor of. So it becomes a situation where you can really dig in on these guys knowing that they're probably going to be Cleveland Browns for at least 2, probably 3 or 4 years. And so it's worth the time. I struggle as somebody that, you know, has a job, thinks about the NFL more broadly. I struggle getting too far into the weeds with draft picks before, especially prospects before they're drafted, because it just feels like, well, there's like a 200 and something chance that this player becomes a Brown, right? So, like, but now that they're on the team, you can really dive in because you have a pretty good feeling that they're going to be around for a while.
Yeah, you don't. It's almost like I feel it at times. I try, as at least these last few classes, Andrew, where the Browns haven't had a first round pick. The fun thing for me to do as somebody who covers the team as a whole is to break down the biggest prospects in the key position the Browns have a chance to take early, right? That is a more fun scouting process. To get into like players that you're taking later, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th round, or UDFA guys, like I genuinely think you have to, you like have to be either doing this full time, this is what your occupation calls for, or like, you know, you're a single male with nothing better to do. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's okay. But to do like those deep dive analysis things, you just can't do all of them. And I get a little annoyed. I did this the first year the Browns didn't have their first round pick, where I'm like, I spent so many hours, I could have been covering the Cleveland Browns better on these late picks that never materialize, when really we just want to know more about who they did select. And I think that like, ultimately, Andrew, that's what we're going to spend a lot of time on in the next few weeks. And I find that to be more of an enjoyable thing to do rather than make definitive statements about prospects that the Browns never pick, right? Like, I like to look at who they picked and come to the understanding of a little bit more of like why they select. That part of it is more fun to me, the why they selected the guys they did. And then again, covering the team a little bit better, right? I mean, that's at least where I lean.
I agree. I think that there's a level of sort of investigatory work that you can do once you know the player is a Cleveland Brown that it doesn't really make sense to do beforehand, because, you know, you can talk a certain amount about the fit of a player that they don't end up drafting, but once they're on the roster and you kind of see how the draft classes come together, then you can start to make some more of those assessments. And so I think that's kind of what we're doing. And it's interesting that I think we might find ourselves saying things differently about some of these guys as we find more out and understand who they are as a player better. It's not, I don't think if you're doing good analysis, it shouldn't need to be that what you say Friday night about Michael Hall is the line all the way through, right? Your opinion of that player can change as more information, more understanding of that player emerges.
And we have a little bit more of that information that's emerged. I know that you had checked out a podcast there. The Athletic show had a little, they didn't spend much time on the Browns, but they did bring up something interesting if you want to hit on that.
Yeah, it's funny when your team doesn't have a first round pick, they pick the latest of any team in the draft. So you get glossed over, right? And I think it affects the way that people grade the drafts and all that sort of stuff. Not that either of us pay too much attention to draft grades, although there was a tweet today of sort of a consensus of draft grades, and the Browns were 31st, which is not where you want to be, even if you don't have a first-round pick. Anyway, Dane Brugler talked a little bit about the Browns draft, and his overall consensus was they liked day three better than he liked day two, and had some questions about the Zach Center pick, which we've already kind of talked through. The part that was interesting was in talking about Michael Hall, he mentioned that he knew of multiple teams that had the player off of their draft boards. And that was not something that I was aware of about Hall as a player. I knew that he was young. I knew that he was not a full-time player at Ohio State. I didn't know that there was a question about him. And I think it's one of those things, kind of reading between the lines, that is not, it's not the same as like document, you know, Watson, the linebacker they picked in the sixth round, has had run-ins with the law, right? He's gotten in trouble in that way. This isn't that. This is more kind of whispers or, you know, it's more vague than something as specific as getting arrested or whatever.
The thing that I've come to understand about that, because that's a big statement from Dane that he's made multiple times. He made it through the draft shows live, and now he's saying it after. To me, what I've connected is that there's some football maturity questions that, again, this is not the person or anything like that, but it is like, again, off the field stuff, any of that. It is genuinely what I've been told is it's a football maturity thing. And like that, some teams didn't either like what they were told or something of the sort, Andrew. That's all I know. And I don't have any other thing to add to that other than, to me, that makes collective sense. If someone is plugged in as Dane is saying that, and like the NFL has this desperation for pass rushers at the interior defensive line position, it's obvious to me something is off a little bit, right? You can point to the fact that he didn't play a ton of snaps, and that could be a part of like Ohio State didn't trust him or whatever, or he didn't prepare the right way. There's a myriad of things that could go into place there. I'm not on the specifics of this, but what I'm saying is, when you have smart people telling you about his pass rush win rate, et cetera, and there are some promising snaps against the run as well, having some guys who went in front of him, again, I understand like Tavondre Sweat's not the same position because, again, there's variance between defensive tackles for what they're supposed to do. Some are a shade, some are a three tech. Mike is a three tech, a more speedy pass rush centric player, whereas some teams are looking for bigger body types. There's differences. So not every one of those ones we talked about on the run up, you know what I'm saying? On the run up to like the selection at 54 is the same, but there are guys like Fisk and some of these others that do a similar thing. and to not take the 20-year-old with the most promising pass rush win rate from Ohio State, it does tell you that there's something there. The Browns were not one of those teams, clearly, that took him off the board. And they could have a belief. You get him in here. Dalvin, experienced NFL leader. We believe in the infrastructure of our defense. Miles Garrett, players rubbing off on him. Him being closer to the people surrounding him in his home area. I that's the thought. But I do think it is clear to me, when Dane says it twice and the data backs up, why would people not be in on a sub 21? He's not even 21 yet. Menace of a pass rusher. Something's just a little off. And teams just, again, it's the NFL draft where teams are turned off by anything. We watched him get Spencer Rattler's high school Netflix as a reason for him. It is, some of these reasons are really dumb, and that could be in play here. But I don't think Dane's lying, Andrew. I don't think he's lying, and I think that the results of the draft kind of add up there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of draft analysts that if they said this, I would kind of take it with a grain of salt because they don't have the track record that Dane does, but he is not that guy. He is, I think he's the best out there. And, I mean, in my opinion, consuming a fair amount of it every year, I think he's very unbiased. I don't think that he has sort of favorites and, you know, unfavorites. I think he talks to everybody and tries to distill all those conversations into an accurate picture of the player. And so this doesn't mean anything in terms of that something's guaranteed to go wrong or anything like that. It just means that there were teams that didn't think that the juice was worth the squeeze. And I think that that's important to note when you're trying to understand this draft class, right? Because we talked about it a lot in the lead up. The Browns had two top 100 picks. And I thought the most important thing was that they try and maximize in a situation where they do need young, productive players who are cost controlled. It was important to maximize the value of those two picks specifically. And I think the further that I get away from Friday night, the more I feel there were probably other paths that would have given you a better chance of maximizing the chances of those players being productive starters for you through their rookie contracts. But I don't think that this draft has been probably the one from the Browns' perspective that's given me the most trouble. And I'm trying, as I said at the top, trying to understand the way they saw it. Right. And people will bring up DeJuan Jones, right? Because that was a player with some similar sort of motivation type questions last year. And it looks so far to be a home run. There's a big difference between a player that you draft in the fourth round and a player that you draft 54th overall.
I think we see it the same way. Again, there are some things that we need to see come to fruition with their side of the belief. You hear them talk to the prospects. You hear kind of the way they go through with their guys. We leak more information out from the GM. I get a lot of where they're coming from with this, but there are some picks here that we're going to talk about that are going to fit into categories that kind of reference a little bit of what we're talking about with Mike Hall here, where we're trying to sort of understand their thought process on some of these. So look, let's take a quick break and then come back from break. And then we'll talk about, like, we have, I don't know, we have like 10 categories here. We'll just kind of go through and name some prospects and give a little bit of our rationale. So we'll be right back. The OBR is proudly sponsored by Game Time Ticket App. When you're buying those tickets and it's the last minute, you don't have to be stressed out. You can go to gametime.co or use the Game Time app to make those last minute ticket decisions in the best possible way, with a fast and easy way to buy tickets for sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. The app does a fantastic job of finding opportunities near you for events, both, like I said, sports and otherwise. We have a comedy show that we found recently with the best price that we could possibly find using Game Time. Great seats. You can scout out the seats, have a great experience, and get the image of those seats all within the app or online, whatever you would like to do. So Game Time is the fast and easy place for those last-minute ticket deals. So take advantage, snag your tickets with Game Time, and avoid the stress. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the promo code OBR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create that account, use the promo code OBR, get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day. And that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system. All right, the first category we have up, Andrew, is favorite pick from the class. This is nothing other than just you really liked the selection. So I will let you hit lead off on that one.
Yeah, after kind of digesting a little bit of what they did at every selection and who the players are, I'm becoming a cliche, I apologize, but I really like Miles Harden, the cornerback from South Dakota at pick 227. It's not that I think he's going to be the best player, but I just really like that style of cornerback. And we've talked about this so much, I feel like I repeat myself too much. We talked about Mike Hilton a bunch. And then we saw a cornerback at Michigan that plays like Mike Hilton, Mike Sainristil still. And Miles Harden, I think, is very much in that mold. And I'm just excited. I don't know that he's going to be a long-term starter or anything like that, but I like the bet. The bet makes a ton of sense to me. And if you can say one, like, unreservedly positive thing about Andrew Berry's drafting, he has drafted the cornerback position as well as anybody in the NFL, as far as I know. I mean, so I'm that's one that I'm excited about, just from the standpoint that I think they might have a player that can stick around. He mentioned in the post-draft press conference some versatility to play safety even, so they're going to potentially look at that as well. So a little bit of positional versatility. You know he's going to contribute on special teams. I'm excited about that player.
I think I still have to go Hall. I think he's got some – we talked about – spent the entire first part of the episode talking about something uncomfortable, but some of the underlying data and when I'm – the more film I'm consuming, not just of the special reps and the pass rush stuff, where he genuinely moves different. Like, he has a chance to be – I hate to say it again, but he looks like Chris Jones sometimes. And I'm not saying he ever gets there, but he looks like he moves with the fluidity of some of these guys who, like these 300-pound men who almost know how to set up a basketball crossover to get to the pass set depth of the guy. It's unique, and when you see it, you're like, okay, that's different. So I guess, obviously, all the stuff that we framed before here is like, on the table, but like, to me, that player becoming that thing is what I'm most excited about. So that's probably why I lean into that being my favorite selection.
It totally makes sense. And that's the player that you hope, obviously, for a lot of different reasons, works out for the Browns the most. And I mean, there's a world in which he's a long-term starter for this team and a homegrown player in so many different ways that it would be really, really cool to see him kind of reach that pinnacle of, you know, if he's not, even if he's not Chris Jones, if he's like a long-term productive, you know, 3, 4, 5 sack a year guy at defensive tackle, that's such a huge find for the Browns.
Right on, right on. Okay, least favorite selection. There's some, you know, some choices we could go with here.
Yeah, so I struggle with this one because it's not that I don't understand the pick of Zach Zinter, but the more that I've thought about it, I just can't get past the fact that you've got a guard on one side who's trying to go into the Hall of Fame, and unless he has told them something behind the scenes, I think he's playing 2 or 3 more years if he can physically.
Right.
And then on the other side, you've got the offensive lineman, Wyatt Teller, that played the best football of any of their offensive linemen last year. So maybe they feel more confident than I do that Joel Bitonio's like decline phase is right around the corner. But if those players don't like rapidly decline, then you just drafted a guard who, like, you want Bitonio and Teller to keep playing well. So you drafted a guard in the 3rd round that shouldn't play for 2 years. I just can't get behind that when it's not that the Browns have gaping holes all over the roster, but a player at 85 should be able to contribute to this roster this year. And I don't think there's a path for Zach Zinter, unless something goes wrong, for him to do that.
That's fair, Andrew. That's fair. I think for me, I'm going to say Jamari Thrash, and I want to remind people it's our least favorite pick, not because we think they're going to be bad players, but just because of maybe who was there, the thought process behind it. I'm saying Jamari Thrash because I think that if you were sort of set on a wide receiver at some point here, which it, to me, looks pretty clear they were, I'm doing that at 85. We talked on yesterday's show about the guys who they could have selected at 85 and the guys that we thought had a good chance to be there in the guard range at 156. And like, I just prefer a Jalen McMillan type to Jamari Thrash at 156. I'd rather that be at 85. So like, again, I think Thrash is a chance to be fine, but I would have rather had a receiver a little bit earlier if that's the path that you were going to go down. Cause it got past 85. I would have punted on that position. I just would have, with the shape of the room this year and knowing that it's something that you're probably going to attack early next year. That's just me though. I understand if people feel a little differently about that.
Yeah, I think those two actually kind of go hand in hand, right? Like, all I would ask is you just flip-flop those. We talked about it last night. I don't need to keep repeating it. Just find a wide receiver that you like at 85. Or, you know, I mean, hell, that was such a great spot that they could have moved up from. I know that I think Malachi Corley went the top of round 3, but I don't know. Yeah, I know that they like Thrash's separation ability. It's something that they've route running and separation ability. They've talked about that a lot. We just heard them talk about. I'm trying to remember if it was a player or a coach talking about how many more choice routes they're going to be running this year. So you need some route running expertise. I understand it, but if Thrash can't get off a press at this level because he's so slight, and Joel Bitonio and Wyatt Teller are their starting guards for 2 more years, you're almost getting nothing from those 2 draft picks.
It's on the table. I guess it's a non-zero chance, right? That is ultimately the outcome of the entire thing. So, all right. So biggest surprise is the next category. I'll go first on this one. I think it's that they didn't trade at all. It's not a player for me. It's just that they didn't move. And I thought they had a chance to close the gap between 156 and 85 in a meaningful way. It was clear people were throwing around some selections in that range. So I just, again, we talked about Zinter, some price tag discount stuff. Could you have got that player maybe 10 picks later? I think that's the biggest surprise for me that they didn't move. I'm not calling it the wrong thing here, but I am saying that it is a bit of a surprise that, that they didn't move. That's again, not a player, but a general decision they made.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that is the biggest surprise, but kind of to build off of that, I would say similarly, like the composition of the draft class being four defensive players and two offensive players, one skill position player, and then on the other side, on the defensive side, two defensive tackles to a room that we thought was already full to overflowing is just surprising. And Andrew Berry addressed that as well in the post-draft press conference and essentially said if he had predicted it before the draft, he would have predicted more offense than defense. And so I have been critical of this draft class. You do have to give the Browns credit for sticking to their draft board, picking the players that they like the most at those slots. But back to your point, Jake, I think this was an opportunity to move around a little bit. If you could have done it without, to the extent possible, protecting future assets, although they also have a boatload of late picks next year that, you know, are you going to miss a sixth from next year necessarily if you've got two of them, or maybe even three they might have? So could you move around a little bit this year to kind of, instead of taking who falls to you, best player available style, or whoever fits your board the best, maybe target some guys to go get them? It seems like there were a few teams that did that. Some of them did trade some pretty significant assets in the future, but other teams did move around a lot more nimbly and kind of find their guys, and it just felt a little strange. It almost felt like we were rooting for a different team all of a sudden. Like, this is how the Steelers draft. They just kind of sit and pick, and that's not what we've come to expect from Andrew Berry.
That's well said. I don't have anything to really add to that. It was initially how we felt, and I'm moving further away from it. I've kind of just grown into surprise about looking back at that they were comfortable sitting there, because it's not like they weren't outwardly public about we had a lot of calls. You know, it's different if they're like, well, we didn't get a call and we just went with the pick. That's a bit of a different scenario there. All right, next one is best value. I think you have already hit on him, but I think this one's relatively obvious for me when you talk about being able to pick a guy who people think have a chance to be in a defensive backfield right away at some point in his rookie year at 227, Miles Harden. I'm a little nervous about setting expectations too high for this young man. But again, the way people talk about him, it makes me think that there's something here. I think the way people have built and crafted, and what I've seen on film, if he gets to Berea and he can't play, I will be pretty surprised. Like, he looks the part against competition that is not bad. I mean, the top of the FCS competition is not bad. And when he played guys at the biggest level, he stood up to the challenge and he was fine in the Shrine Bowl. So, like, I just would be surprised if Miles Harden shows up to Berea and is overwhelmed, largely because the Browns do such a good job of eliminating things from the thinking aspect as well as any defense, it seems. So, again, 227 for a player that could fit in as a slot in the form of his rookie contract would be a home run. I have to feel like that's the best value they were able to accomplish. But you could make an argument for Hall, or you could make one for Nathaniel Watson based on some of his production. I don't know if you have a different answer than me, though, Andrew.
Yeah, I think Harden is a good choice. And yeah, Nathaniel Watson would be, I think, the runner-up just in terms of linebacker is depressed overall, so you can tend to get good value there. But I think for the most part, just in terms of like consensus big board, which is really the best way you can measure value, the Browns didn't get many values, to be honest. I think Harden was by far the latest compared to where they were supposed to go. So I know that that's been the case in other years for Cleveland, that they have not necessarily been value hunters, so to speak. But I think it really stuck out this year.
All right. This is an interesting off the Browns path here, but it's just a wish we had them category. We've seen a lot of interviews, guys coming into buildings, different draft calls that happened out there. If you haven't seen the one with Jared Verse and Braden Fisk, go check that one out. Really cool job by the Rams to get those two teammates involved. Had a really touching moment at the end of that one. The Browns posted a video on pretty much all of their guys getting a FaceTime message and whatever. I think my favorite one of those was probably Briggs. I thought that one was pretty unique to hear them talk about Andrew Berry say that he's never had somebody write a more thoughtful and meaningful text after visiting an organization. And it's clear that that guy has had a real impact on the Browns already. But yeah, is there a wish we had them guy for you as we move away from this thing a little bit, Andrew?
I don't want to go into the first round because it just wasn't ever going to happen for them, you know? Right. Javon Baker, the wide receiver from UCF, was not a player that I was like super high on during the process, but his answer in New England about you know, he's going to make people stand up out of wheelchairs or something like that. Like, I mean, that stuff is part of the overall picture, right? But I understand the Lions traded a future third, but that gigantic left tackle from British Columbia, Giovanni Manu, I'm honestly pretty bummed that the Browns didn't come out of this draft with a developmental tackle. I know that there's reasons why it didn't line up that way, but honestly, that's probably just like they didn't draft a wide receiver, or they didn't draft a running back, they didn't draft a tight end, they didn't draft a tackle. The developmental tackle thing, I just thought there were so many in this class. It was like, can you find one of those guys at 243 or 206? I don't know, but.
I will say, Andrew, real quick, that based on what they do in the UDFA market, and we will spend time on that in the next few days, it's pretty clear that they went out and spent on offensive line and the UDFA side. Like the two tackles that they signed, and again, I'm not even saying their names, but from people who cover this at a deep dive level, pretty well respected, that people think are going to make rosters, and that was before Cleveland brought them in. And then the guard that they brought in too. So I think they wanted to is the point, and they realized they couldn't based on whatever values they had. And ultimately, I'm pretty sure Karan being gone was a surprise to them when he went before 85. And I have to think if him and Zenter were both there, they would have took him. But to your point, it is disappointing. And I'm sure if you talk to them, they're probably disappointed about it. And they tried to maybe cover their tracks with UDFA shots at least.
I agree with that. So I guess... I did the hipster thing with saying my favorite pick was the seventh round nickelback. So we'll say the Canadian left tackle is my favorite, is the player I wish I had the most.
I like it. I think that's guy's fun. There's some real promising parts of the study of that tape that gets into it. I would say, I mean, Keon Coleman's interview is a blast. Like you just kind of like wish you had a chance to maybe have that guy on your team. He went way earlier than the Browns could have possibly selected him, but that's a guy that I sort of looking at it, he would be a really fun presence around the organization. I don't have a ton other than, you know, Karan that we just talked about. He would have been a really great selection for them kind of sitting at that spot. But if you go back and look, for me, a guy I was kind of really hoping would be there at 85 and he wasn't was Junior Colson. I just wish they had him. I think he's going to be a really good player. I know that there's some parts of the profile people don't like, didn't get a chance to test, maybe didn't have as many solo tackles as some people like, but he's a player. He would be such a good mic next to JOK for the long term. So that's where I found myself a bit disappointed, was that the two linebackers that I took the most serious between Cooper and then Colson, and hoping one of them would be there at 54 and then one of them would be there at 85. Neither of them were there. So that's where I found myself a bit of a wish we had them thing, more so with Colson, just because you could talk me into upside rush, pass rush defensive tackles every year. You want to swing on those guys. So I'm not disappointed in Hall, but not to have a chance to maybe get Colson was a bit of a bummer. And again, I blame the simulators who do this to us every year, thinking some of these guys will be there that just one. And I think this is something I want to mentally remember, and you and I have to do this going into next year's draft. Who is the guy that is just free falling and we're texting each other? What's the deal with this guy? Why is he available this year? It turns into, and these guys are selected at the top of the fourth round every year. It was Perrion Winfrey for the Browns, took a few years. What was that? The 22 draft, the 23 draft. It's DeJuan Jones. And then this year, it's Jatavion Sanders and Troy Franklin, two of them that people were like pegging to go in the second round for all the four. So we got to remember that. Who are going to be the guys? Some of it's off the field, so we wouldn't know. But maybe the profile that people don't like. Like, again, Sanders in the bench press, and he doesn't block. And, like, some of the stuff with Troy Franklin and ball tracking and some rigidity in the routes. Like, we got to try to pin that down because it happens every single year. It feels like to me, at least in recent years, where there's a prospect or two built up by the media that the NFL just doesn't like.
Yeah, you could make a lot of money if you could identify those players every year because they really defy expectations.
We're going to try to make money next year. Noted out there, folks. Pay attention. All right, two categories left. These are fun. Most impactful in 2024 from this draft class. It's an interesting one. It's not clear for any of these guys.
Yeah, I think it has to be Hall, though, because I just think there's not a clear path to significant snaps for any other player that they drafted, which is good. That's something that you want if you're a Browns fan. You don't want them drafting players and then starting them week one. But I don't – I mean, to the point that you were making earlier, all of the defensive tackles that they've kind of stocked up on over the past 2 years, I like. None of them across the board can do what he can do. So
right.
There's a path there similar to – I'm trying to think of you know, a comparison. It's almost like – I mean, you go way back to Jannard Avery. Later round pick, but he had movement skills that other guys couldn't touch. And, you know, I don't think he ever played as well as he did his rookie year in Cleveland, but he just – moved differently, and it allowed him to get in situations. Now, very different team, right? They were a bad football team, and so it's easier to find snaps for a fifth rounder. But I just think that's going to be so hard. And the way Schwartz coaches, Hall's going to find the field. He's going to find the quarterback. He's going to have an impact on this team. He's going to be part of that rotation. And I think the best case scenario, we talked a bunch about this off the top, the best case scenario for him in his NFL career is taste that success early. Get it, you know, get an idea of what it's like to have a whole stadium going crazy for you, and just keep, you know, then put your head down and go to work and try and have that feeling as often as you can.
Well said. He's the only answer that makes sense. I cannot put that pressure on the 227th pick in the draft. That's the only other one. He's the runner up by virtue of, like, there's a chance that Greg has to move outside and he gets a chance to play inside, or he just impresses them in a physicality standpoint that they haven't had from the slot. And they're like trying to figure out some different. I hate putting expectations on seventh round picks. It's borderline insanity. But again, people smarter than me in the cycle of studying prospects really like him. And for some reason he was sitting there, maybe competition level concerns. I'm not sure, but that's the one who has a chance in 24. And then we close with most impactful career, and we're probably saying Mike Hall again, but I think it's a little less certain. I think Zenter's probably going to be a really good guard for like 8 years or so, and that's probably the safest answer, right?
Yeah, that's the ultimate irony, is that the pick that I've bitched about the most is the safest pick to have a long, successful NFL career. So, I mean, I said earlier there's a chance that they get nothing out of their top two picks, I didn't say top two. I said from Zinter and Thrash through their rookie contracts.
Right.
That's not to say that I don't think he'll play for the Browns. It's to say that, like, if he doesn't play for the first 2 years, you picked him in round three, how much does that matter? But the Browns really are, as I said earlier, looking at this long term, and they want somebody to be able to slide in effortlessly at the point that they are ready to stop paying either Betonio or Teller. And it is sensible. It's over the top to me. That's my criticism of it, but it is understandable. And so that's definitely the player, because I think he's going to be good. And I think there's lots of reasons to expect that based on his tape and the way that the Browns develop these players. I think there's a path for him to be a really good player. So it's such a nuanced conversation to talk about why you don't like the pick while at the same time acknowledging that the player can be good long term. Because ultimately the draft is a results-oriented business, but you have to be more process-oriented than results-oriented when you're thinking about these things, and that's where I'm trying to look at it from. But
yeah.
I do grant absolutely that he has a really good chance, I think, or as good a chance as any third-round player to have a long NFL career.
Yeah, and it speaks to the value of guard. I understand the Browns asked their guards to do some pretty serious things here and there. That's probably likely to change over the next few years in terms of the severity of what they're asking them to do in space. But I'll say like 8 to 10 years of a guard, does that matter more than 5 years of a really impactful receiver?
Right.
I think that's where you start ask some of those questions, right? I don't have a different answer than Zinter. Someone says you have to put $150 here on the guy to do it. It's just the safest choice, right? And if you're looking at this draft class and 2034 on Football Reference, looking at the weighted career value, it's probably him. But we want it to be Mike Hall. They need it to be Mike Hall because, man, hitting a home run, a defensive tackle, and especially doing it at pick 54 can alter the course of your franchise. It really can.
Yeah. You invoked Chris Jones earlier, and like that's two things can be true. That's not a fair thing to put on the kid, but also like you can find these defensive tackles that are true game wreckers outside of the, it's not often, but you can find them outside of the first round. And I think we started talking about some of the reservations that other teams might have. I understand fully the Browns taking the swing on this kid.
And just a reminder, Chris Jones was a second round guy. He wasn't quite 54. He was 37 in his draft, but it wasn't black and white that he was going to be an immediate impact player. And again, it wasn't something that they knew he was going to be some franchise defining player, Andrew. I mean, you look at his college stats, 3 sacks in 2013, 3 sacks in 2014, 2.5 sacks in 2015. He only had 18 total tackles for loss across those 3 years. So you're talking about Chris Jones now. It's a little hard. You got to squint your eyes and be like, Jake, come on, man. Are you serious? Chris Jones, a prospect. It's pretty similar. So getting even half of what Chris Jones has turned into would be a slam dunk. So hopefully something of the sort happens. Listen, that's a wrap. I hope you guys had fun with this episode. It was meant to be fun and make you guys think a little bit differently about the draft class and get you thinking about now and maybe down the line what these guys ultimately turn into. So Andrew and I enjoyed it, and I hopefully you guys did too. Listen, coverage is going to be, I think, pretty great this week on this draft class and the players they selected, all of that stuff. So check it out. It'll be at the OBR all week. So again, take some of your time, stop by in the morning, maybe at your lunch break and read about these guys. I think the staff is going to put together some good work on them. And then Andrew and I will continue to break down different various parts of these guys throughout this upcoming week and really go in depth with the undrafted free agent class too. So that's a pod that's coming for you soon. Rate and review if you can. We always appreciate that very much. And thank you for taking the time out of your day whenever that time is for listening to this podcast. Have a fantastic Monday and start to your week, guys. And we say, as usual, go Browns.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.